closer.
You are listening to Two Magicians, One Mic.
Hey everybody, welcome to Two Magicians, One Mic. My name is Nick Paul, that's Robert Ramirez, and we're back. We're still doing this, guys. I don't know why, but we're still doing this.
We're here.
We're here, we're living in the moment. I had somebody reach out on the Instagram and say, hey, thanks for bringing the show, a couple of people, thanks for bringing the show back. And thank you for taking time for yourself. That was nice and considerate of them.
Yeah, that's so nice. That's very sweet that they would... They want to listen still, that they're excited about something. I think that's the hardest thing. We got to be excited about something.
I give people credit. There's so many podcasts out there. And I've been doing this podcast since like 2012 off and on. And man, just like podcasting has just exploded in the past couple of years. And just one celebrity after another, I think because of quarantine, is like, well, what can I do? A podcast with my friends.
Yeah. I think it started as like old celebrities who wanted like... get their names back in the world first, and now it's like anybody has nothing to do.
It seems like, I mean, it was always comedians were the smart ones, I think, that did this, picked on this up early on, because they're like, oh, you can create a small following and then people will buy tickets to your shows, and it's genius. But yeah. If you're like a movie star, what's the point?
You don't want to watch Leonardo, you don't want to listen to Leonardo DiCaprio's podcast?
You know what? I kind of would. I wouldn't. He's a fascinating fellow. Him and Brad Pitt were on WTF last summer, and I really enjoyed that because they were just goofing around, and you don't really hear. There's a lot of people that I kind of respect that just don't do interviews, and it's kind of more mysterious when they come out of the woodwork, and then you're like, oh, they're just like me. That's fun.
They're a normal person.
How in your week of magic, anything exciting happening?
I'm making more models. I get very scared because right now I'm making their ideas and then I have to put them in the Cricut design, the little machine that cuts. You have to put it in the design space. So I'm like testing stuff in there and like I can get so specific on sizes. And so I do that and I cut it and then I get terrified because then I have to glue it. But I've made the cut so precise that if I don't glue it straight, then it may not work. So last night, I was finishing gluing something that's in Tarbell 7, I believe. And I was so nervous it wasn't going to work because, I mean, it's like precise. And I had to glue a bunch of pieces together in order to make it one big piece.
For non-magic people, Tarbell is an amazing series of books. Like, started off, I think, many magicians, that's like their go-to thing.
Yeah, I think a lot of us starter. A good starter, kind of explores a lot of different types of magic and is a really good source for a lot of magic. You'd be surprised. You'll see a trick and go, I wonder, you know, how old that is. And you go back into Tarbell and you go, oh my goodness, it's a really old trick. So I was making something like that and it works so far. I have to finish one more piece on it, but that's like been the most terrifying thing is precision gluing.
Mm-hmm. I think both of us are fine because you and I, without going into details, are helping out on the Theory 11 virtual show that Dan White's doing. We're just, you know, helping with a few, a prop, a very specific prop.
Yeah.
And we both started on it yesterday, I think, or the day before. And we have to make a lot of this prop. And it's fun. I love the Teller quote of sometimes magic is just working on something longer than you would think reasonably but possible or reasonably sane or something like
that.
I'm butchering the quote, but man, and it's a lot of what you're doing too, of just like making sure it's precise and making sure it's perfect. And like the funny part is we have to be okay as humans with people not knowing that we put all this work into it and B, not caring.
Yeah. You know? Oh, yeah. That's the hardest part is not caring. Yeah. Oh, yeah. I worked all morning on making those props today.
Yeah. I'm not even halfway through like the second set. And oh, boy.
Oh, I did the hard part first. I just did all of them before I got on this, before we started this.
Yeah. I think you're kind of more adapt to that than I am. It's, I'm used to just making. Even on humans, like, we'd make one or two versions or 10 versions of a thing. Here we're making literally 150 versions of a thing.
You should. See, here's the thing. If you're ever going to do something that's mind-numbing, you want to put something that's going to keep your interest, to watch something that keeps your interest just enough that doesn't make you not pay attention to the thing you're doing. Because, like, if you're watching a movie, like, let's say you've never seen The Avengers, and you're doing this mind-numbing task that, you know, repetitive little thing for, like, 3 hours, and you're like, oh, I want to watch something while I do this, you can't put on The Avengers if you've never seen it, because you're going to be paying attention so much to it that you will completely mess up the thing you're doing, mm-hmm. you're making. So I've been watching shows that I've never seen, but that are not, I don't need 100% of my attention.
We put on Even Stevens from the old Disney Channel days, and I'm like, yeah, this is perfect.
Yeah, that's great.
I am a 12-year-old mind at this point, because I'm like half listening to what's going on.
Correct. But I can't do The Office. That's what I've realized.
Really?
Because I will watch The Office, which is weird.
It can't be. It's basically just meditation is what we're doing. It's physical meditation with, you know, repetitive nature.
Yes.
And you have to get into the right space of mind. It's a weird thing. I noticed I was trying to like cut some corners where, you know, we're getting an assembly line going. And then I'm like, no, I'll just do it all at once. And then I went back and checked a few, and I forgot things. And I'm like, it's amazing how your brain can work in that capacity of, like, can easily repeat the same thing over and over. But if you add two or three tasks to it, then all of a sudden your brain, the RAM in your brain is going on overdrive. It's pretty crazy how that works.
Yeah, and to me, like, I set out all of them on my table. So I unboxed them, and then I set them all out on the table. And as I'm doing the first step of it, I, like, get halfway, and it took me, what, an hour and a half, 2 hours, and I kind of just looked at the other half and thought, well, do I finish the half I've just done, or do I just finish doing the first phase on all of them? And I kind of went, yeah, because then I know the second phase is going to be so much faster and easier. So then I just sat and just kept doing the next one, and it felt, it didn't feel as daunting. I feel like if I would have done each one, like, all the phases in one go.
Mm-hmm.
Because exactly.
It's cool what they're doing, because if you buy a ticket to Dan, I mean, free promotion for Theory 11 show, but if you buy a ticket, you get, you know, this box of some stuff that you'll interact with in the show. And, you know, we're not creating anything magical or special. We're just, you know, making sure it fits inside this box, apparently. And it's amazing how quickly
if you get a ticket to the Dan White virtual show, smell it. And you will smell either my house or Nick Paul's.
I've been cooking a lot of bacon. So if there is bacon on one of the things you're holding or smells like bacon, you know it's from my house.
Yeah, that's great. That's perfect. Exactly. See? I'm trying to think of the other show. So I watched We Are the Champions, which is produced by Rainn Wilson.
Nice.
And narrated by Rainn Wilson.
What is that about?
It is 6 episodes of weird competitions.
Gotcha.
So, like, the first one is the wheel of cheese that rolls down a hill and people run down it. I don't remember what country that's in, but that's crazy. Then there's, like, frog jumping. Did you know frog jumping is a serious world championship?
I knew frogs jumped. I didn't know it was a championship.
There's a world championship of frog jumping. And what's really great about it, Rainn Wilson, if the sport is very, very dumb, his commentary on it is making fun of it. I mean, there's like, you can just hear the sarcasm in his voice. But when it's like kind of serious, like there's a yo-yo championship, he's like kind of making fun of it, but like you can tell that it's like this is a very serious thing, like these people really care about it. But when he gets to like dog dancing, world champion dog dancing, he like, you can just tell he's making fun of it, and you just kind of go, oh my god, this is great.
That's why my mind is blown anytime somebody, I mean, obviously back in the normal days, when, you know, somebody comes up to you on a cruise ship and goes, wow, you do this professionally? Like, to me, being a magician isn't absurd. What's absurd to me is like frog jumping or dog dancing and like people devoting their lives to that, or like a good portion of their lives to that.
Oh, yeah.
That's insane to me.
Yeah, that's pretty crazy. I couldn't imagine. I'm trying to think, what else, what's not like a sport that people would devote time to? That makes
no
sense.
I mean, hot dog eating.
Yeah, that shouldn't be a sport. That's crazy.
Trying to think. There's something else. I mean, there's a million things of just like things humans do and things humans work on that are just fascinating. And it's, once again, it, like I said, comes back to, I can't believe people are surprised. Wait, you do card tricks? Something that's been around for 150 years plus.
It is weird to think about. I was watching, I watch a lot of, I don't watch a lot of, my like YouTube, if you went through my YouTube like recommended videos, there's such a wide range of topics that come up, which always make me laugh because I like look back and go, oh yeah, I guess I kind of like watching those videos. It's like skateboarding videos, then I watch a lot of like video game videos, but it is interesting, like people who speed run video games, that I mean, if your speed run takes an hour and you mess up 45 minutes into it, they just start over. You kind of go, oh my god, that's 2 hours you're about to waste.
That is my biggest, like, I play, you know, Call of Duty and Overwatch with some buddies, and we'll play, like, maybe an hour or two every day, every other day. But, like, I'll hit that hour mark and be like, I need to do something else now. Like, if I keep doing this, I'm going to be really sad the rest of the day that I spent more time. Because it's kind of like, you know, it's like chocolate cake. It's like, it's good up until a point, and then if you just keep consuming it, you're like, oh, what am I doing with
this?
There
are some people that just want to see how much chocolate cake they can eat.
Exactly. And I mean, those people are on Twitch and are probably making lots of money. But
it's true.
It blows my mind when that's your primary objective. But I guess, I mean, no judgments. It's everybody's...
Oh, no. I literally want to speedrun a video game so bad. But it's one of those things where it's exactly that, where it's like, do I want to dedicate time to something that only I will feel good about and like care about?
Yeah, it's becomes like a self-serving thing at that point.
Yeah, it also feels like you're, it's almost like the amount of time we devote into our careers of magic, which some people do as a hobby, but it's like us devoting the same amount of time in a hobby.
Yeah.
Like, I want to do as many crossword puzzles as possible. I just want to do as many crossword puzzle books as possible. Can you go, that's what? All right.
Yeah. I think it's different too. Like in the buddies I play with, they have real jobs. So, you know, when I'm not hanging with them, you know, I'm either working on my own stuff career-wise, but for them, if they're not working, they're not doing their job. But I think for us, it's like, we're also, even when we're not working, we're still working on our job in some capacity. So I think that's the difference, in that I think they're able to, I think a lot of people are able to separate it in their brain of, this is relaxation time and this is work time. And that's the thing I struggle with when, you know, if they want to play during the day and I'm working something in my office, I'm like, well, I guess I can take an hour. And then I'm like, I didn't really earn it. Like, why am I playing right now? I don't know. It's all how you perceive it, I suppose.
Yeah, that's very interesting. I feel like, yeah, you want to do. You want to feel like you've earned playtime, I guess, in a way.
Yeah, and it just it always reaches a point for me where I'm like, okay, I can't.
Yeah, I would say, and it's really hard. I mean, it's really hard for me, and I would say it's probably for you. The way you've just said that is like, a lot of times during the day, I'm not doing anything because I'm either waiting for a gig, which is going to be, you know, a week from now, so I have kind of nothing to do up to that. So I could like put that show together, I guess, but there's not a lot of prep for that. Or I can make something new, or it's just kind of go, there's stuff I could be doing, which makes it feel very like I didn't earn to go play.
Yeah. Yeah, time management, especially in quarantine days, is so tricky because, and I think it's funny how people are so divided about working from home too, of like, I can't handle this, to like, this is the greatest thing ever. And yeah. I think all of us, I'm hearing a majority of people are like, I would like to go to the office 3 days a week and work from home the other three, because I think that breaks up the monotony of doing the same thing over and over and keeps it fresh. And I think it kind of comes down to that too, of, you know, what you're working on in your show as opposed to, and also like, I work, if I have less time, it's not even procrastination, but if I have less time, I will be more creative. It's just 100% every single time. If I have a week to work on something, it's not going to be as good. But if I have a day to work on something, I'll get it done, and it's going to be, I'll be more excited about it too.
Yeah. I feel like when I have less time to do something, it turns into, I will figure out something more important about the thing I'm making. So let's say I'm creating a magic trick and I procrastinate it, or I only have a day to do it. I will do it super fast and realize, oh, here's the things I should have done. Here's all the like the things I should have fixed. And if I think like, oh, but if I had a week, I could have fixed all these things. But I know that is not true. Mm-hmm. Like, I feel like I find those discoveries because I'm doing it so fast that I find the flaws that I could, that I will fix next time. But if I had a week to do it, I think I would just like take my time and not realize those flaws were there until I get to the end of that week.
Yeah. Because you get to the end, you get to the end so much slower that you're not focused on the,
you don't see
how
those,
you got there.
Yeah. You don't see those flaws kind of pop up, which is why like the thing I'm making that I have to glue precise, I've been taking so long doing it. But when I do work on it, I just like do a ton of work on it in one go and then wait a couple of days and then do a ton of work on it again. And that kind of helps simulate that of like, I only have 3 hours to work on this today.
Do you think that comes from, I mean, because we both have a theater background, but you did it for real. you were in the Heights on in the touring show back in, what, 2011, 2012?
Yeah, creepy. Do you have my resume in front of you?
I have it right here.
Oh, my goodness.
That's Christian's
I wish everyone could
hanging
see,
on the wall right now.
I wish everyone could have seen what I saw in this meeting, which is watching Nick reach for invisible paper and like realizing he doesn't have the sound effect for it, and then looking around and then grabbing from off screen because I can't see it, and then making noise to be like, see, I have paper.
I'm in my wife's voiceover booth, right? Homemade. It's a legit voiceover booth, and she has a script on the wall right now. I'm like, I can use that.
Nick, you're using it too. It's your booth. You both.
No,
use
it's hers. She's letting me use it. She's very kind.
I'm in a closet filled with blankets.
I mean, it definitely doesn't look like that.
Oh, it smells like it though.
Still smells like bacon over here. Why did I bring up theater? Oh, the reason I think that because like in terms of like having less time to work on something, that's just how rehearsals work. It's like, okay, tomorrow you got to come in, know your lines.
Yeah.
Get fired.
Yeah, and something I became very bad at. It shows in my magic. It shows if you know me. If you had a documentary of following me from the day I booked a gig to the actual gig, you'll see how much time I don't take anymore to prep for said gig until the day of the show where I'm running around going, I'll do this trick or this trick. Actually, now what I do is I do write a set list way before, but I still wait day of show to run around and grab those things that I need for that set list. But like in my theater, prime theater days, the thing I started to get lazy at was like, I would get to the rehearsal. And if I had a scene, I would memorize my lines as I was doing the scene.
Mm.
Like I looked through it, but like I wouldn't memorize them. I had to like, I would just do it. I had to get that like, what is that? Kinesthetic learner? I have to do it in order to learn it.
Oh yeah. The physicality. Well, that's a memory thing too. Is like your brain is remembering it based on the location you're at and what you're doing.
Yeah, and so it was always. I'm always so impressed with people who can just like memorize words, and then add an action to it. That makes no sense to me. Even like the script I have for the Thurston 5-card thing, I never get right. Because I feel like I'm never in the same place, so I always have a different visual in front of me that I can never get that script the exact same every single time. Unless I'm doing it at the castle.
It's harder that's why it's harder with Matt, because in a theater setting, you're in, the set is always the same, you know, the lighting's, the people are always the same.
Yeah.
That I never thought of that before. That's probably why it's harder to memorize certain things in magic, because you can get the physicality down, but like the setting is always going to be different. So there's always going to be something throwing your memory on that. That's a good point.
So it kind of helps. I mean, I think that's where like good improv kind of kicks in, because then your brain is so locked in what the script is already that when something gets thrown at you, you can play with it. And I think that to me, that's why it's super important for magicians or kind of any performing, any like public speaking. Improv is so helpful.
Yeah.
in like...
Yeah, if you haven't listened to the episode that Simon and I did with Mark Evan Jackson from The Good Place and Brooklyn Nine-Nine and Parks and Rec, he's a, you know, really well-known improviser out of Second City, Detroit, and has been here forever. And we talk about that quite a bit. And it's, yeah, and even... I think there's just such a misconception with improv. It's like, well, people do it because they want to be on Saturday Night Live, when in reality, it's like, no, you should be doing it just to be a better human in any capacity, because you're taught how to listen.
Yeah, I think people think improv equals that's how you learn how to be funny. And I think what it really is it helps you have, like, use left, like, not left brain, right brain, but, like, two different brains happening at the same time, that you're aware of what's happening in the moment, but you're also thinking about what's going to be happening and how you can get to that point.
I did improv in Chicago for 5 years in college and after college, and it wasn't until years after I stopped doing it that I realized all those lessons came flooding back. And just over the past couple of years of performing and, you know, doing shows like with you or other people where we're able to improvise with what's going on. And even Justin, too, like when I've worked with him, he's very good about, you know, it's so hard when you see a performer. And I had a friend who was describing another performer, both will remain nameless, but he said the show is the exact same whether or not there's an audience. And I think that is such a crutch for people. Like, they don't react to what's happening. And that's, you know, a common topic on this show. But I forget how we even got... I'm so confused. Speaking of listening, I forget how we even got on the subject of improv. Oh, it was memorizing lines.
Yes.
And then
using...
limited time to do that.
Yeah. I think that... yeah, man, I miss improv so much. I feel like, though, like, there's a sense of... I don't know, like when you and I are doing a show together, it's this very... Oh, that's what I was thinking. Haha, man, we're both bad. Our brains have been melted from this project
we're doing. It is. It really is. But also, it's just like, this is how memory works. And there's like a fascinating book on this. And I'm blank. I think it's called...
Oh, no.
Now I can't remember the name. Look, something with Einstein, you know, hanging out with Einstein. I just saw it the other day. But it's just basically, and there's memory competitions too, mm-hmm. and people are just so amazed at the ability to remember things. And honestly, it's doing exactly what we're saying. It's creating a memory palace, and it's giving a location to the thing that you're trying to memorize.
Yeah.
And sorry, I cut you off. But
no, but I would agree. I was reading, there's a book called The Memory Arts, which is put out by Vanishing Ink, I think, which talks about a mnemonic system for not just memorizing a deck of cards, but they give you a mnemonic system for numbers 1 through 52, and I think they kind of show you how to expand that if you want to. So, like, I was working on that for quite a while, and I could still kind of do it. I think I'm only up to 24. I don't remember. But it was kind of fascinating, because I'd realize how fast I was memorizing stuff if I just associated it with that mnemonic system of, like...
Sure, yeah.
They did, like, painting. So you would have a painting in your head of one, and one would represent a lighthouse because it's a tall thing. And they're just... They just constantly talk about, you know, putting details into it so that you can physically see this thing. And so it helped so much. But... And what it's strange about is, like, I could probably run through... I haven't looked at that book for... almost 9 months, maybe 10 months. I could probably still run through most of those numbers and
sure,
tell you
yeah.
what the picture frame is. So like that stuff really, really helps. But I think that's the, speaking of like the show's the same without the audience. I think I don't have a problem with magicians doing like hack lines or like set jokes that are always ready to go. To set
yeah,
up the audience
I mean,
number.
That's improv is that way too, where it's like if you have something in your back pocket that's a callback, that's just you having that ready to go.
Yeah,
it's not
100%.
I don't think that's cheating.
No. But I think like I think it's always interesting. I would rather it's interesting when someone does something in a show and you go, oh my goodness, that's the funniest thing that could happen. How can I recreate this every single time? So like to me, I would rather not recreate it and just kind of share that moment and just kind of go like that is something that's possible and mm-hmm. was great and like what an acknowledgement of like not the skill but like the ability to like interact with another human and get such a good laugh out of it.
There is no greater disappointment that I've learned than I worked with an act a couple of years ago, and there was something in the show, and I'm trying to be vague about it. And I went up to them after, and I go, "Wow, that was hilarious! How you guys called that out? That, like, how did you even do that?" And they're like, "Oh, that happens every show. Like, ooh, that's just part of it." And it was just such a letdown. It was more than like a magician, I think, revealing a trick to the audience. It was more just like, "No, this is all bullshit."
Yeah. There is,
and it hurt me, and like it was done masterfully, so nobody would know unless you ask. So in that sense, brilliant. But in the other sense of like, oh, that's just, it's so much cheating to me.
Yeah. And it's so funny. I had seen, he doesn't do the show anymore, so I'm going to say it. It's a great show. This is a compliment. This is no way, shape, or form putting down. But Dana Daniels has a great show, if you've ever seen the No Show, where he plays.
Oh, yeah. It's one of my favorites. That was the first show I ever saw at the Castle back before I moved to LA, and it blew my mind.
It's unbelievable. There is a moment.
We got to get Dana on here. He's a good guy.
Oh, he's so nice. There's this great moment in the show that I cry laughed. I was sitting next to Nathan Fan in the Palace at the Castle, and we both were, tears were coming out of our eyes. We were laughing so hard at this mistake that had happened. And then Nathan saw the show again, like later that week or something, and just texted me and said, "You're not going to believe this."
Yeah.
And he's like, "That happens every time." And I was like, I feel like I wasted a cry laugh, but I don't feel like that at all because it's just well written.
It is tough, yeah. And I mean, my judgments of the act I was describing isn't 100% warranted, but there is something about, it's a skill to do that, to make the audience think. It's no, I guess, what's the difference between that and a magic trick?
Yeah, but I think there's, I don't even know if it's like, it's the problem with sucker effects in magic, which is a trick that it looks like the magician is failing, and then they come back and reveal it all worked out, which is, I think, the worst. I used to only do sucker tricks. I mean, I feel
like most of my act is sucker tricks, but
I've seen
it.
It's not.
I hope it's not the intention of that. I feel like everything is like a fake out and then the reveal, at least a lot of what I do. And I got that from working with Simon and other guys who I really respected.
Oh, yeah.
But I think it's different if you're doing it. I don't know. Like, describe it. Like,
well, I think there's a fine line. Here's what I'd say. There's like a tongue-in-cheek version of a sucker effect that I think is totally fine because I think we as the audience understand it's a piece of theater almost that we're watching.
Yeah.
That we're just like, oh, yeah, uh-oh, he's messing up. He doesn't know what the card is. There it is. Like, you know he's going to win. And yeah. I think that's completely fine and well done if it's in the set sense that, like, everyone's like, oh, I know it's going to happen. Like, oh, that's not the card. I mean, kind of like the card in mouth. Like, is doesn't feel like a genuine sucker effect. It doesn't feel like, oh, he messed up. Mm-hmm. And like an awkward feeling. But like, I want to do a sucker trick. I don't know if one exists, if you can think of one. I want to do a sucker effect that feels like the dinner party in The Office. Like, I want to do one where the audience feels so just feels horrible.
And this episode is, it's funny. With Simon and I, we'd always quote Rick and Morty. I think you and I are always going to quote The Office.
I want to quote Rick and Morty. Now I'm sad.
Well, we can, but yes, I'm just saying, like, it's organically coming up.
It's true.
Yeah, if you haven't seen this episode, this is the one where Michael and Jan invite the two of them over.
Yes.
It's just Jim and Pam, right?
Or no, and does Andy, Dwight and Andy and Angela. And then Dwight shows up with his babysitter.
That's it. Yeah. Am I thinking of, is this the tiny LCD TV one?
Yes.
Okay, yeah, I am thinking of the same one. Yeah, so it's just cringeworthy. These things go wrong. And yeah.
But it's like watching a relationship. I mean, you're watching a couple fight in front of people. It's so, it's like, ew, it hurts everything. And it's a lot of people's worst, like, episode that people don't watch. They have to skip it because it makes them feel bad.
I skip that one and Scott's Tots. I can't watch Scott's Tots.
I can do Scott's Tots now. I'm okay with it. Yeah, it's pretty bad.
They let him off the hook way too easy. The writers, it's not a great third act on that one. Anyway, continue. So you're comparing that to a Sucker Effect.
Yeah, I want to see
failing
someone,
intentionally.
Yes, but I want to see someone failing to the point where the audience genuinely thinks that, like, well, I guess, what's going to happen? Yeah, I don't know. So, like, did you see The Parlor, the Herbert Pocket show?
I did, yeah. So you pretended to be a manager at the Magic Castle and then performed the show yourself in manager outfit.
Yeah. And
you introduced yourself and then acted like the performer never came. It was fun. It was a great show.
And I would say, like, there was no sucker tricks in it. I mean, essentially the whole show was a Sucker Effect. But the only time I felt the uncomfortableness was when I went in the back to go get the magician and I came back out. And the audience would be like, oh, it's him. He's the magician. And then sure. I would read a note about how he's not coming. And then I really felt those people that yelled what they thought the show was kind of get really uneasy.
Mm.
But that was the only time in the show. But I want to see like a trick where like it's like if you did card in mouth in the balloon and you do that, but you just spend 2 minutes genuinely trying to be convinced that it has to be the card because I have no.
Yeah.
Please.
No, that's it. Yeah.
Please. This has to be it. Please. Like you're just like you're trying to. What a great concept. You're trying to convince that spectator to be nice and just be like, yep, that's my card.
Which has happened from time to time. Yep, that's it. And I'm like, no. You're letting me off the hook. Maybe they just wanted the show to be done. That's funny that people, because when I did it, I don't know if people, I think half the audience, well, if they were magicians, they maybe caught it because they knew you. But then the other half was, I think, a little confused as to what was going on.
Well, yeah, I think lots of people left that parlor show confused, but I don't think they felt bad.
Mm-hmm. And I think everybody walked out of there going, oh, that was really impressive. I wonder how that manager did that.
Yeah. And I think, man, I wish there was card trick. I wish there was a magic trick where the Sucker Effect, the part where he fails lasts much longer than it should. Yeah, I don't know. Because, like, is the reveal then more powerful or do you feel more duped? Do you feel like you're applauding the, like, oh my goodness, we got out of that awkward situation or, like, that man tricked me for 2.5 minutes to make me feel bad for him? Like, do you feel more deceived emotionally?
I can't remember the example, but for some reason my memory is being triggered of some ventriloquist that did this in some capacity. I don't know if it was like a fake baby or like the puppet was falling apart or something. It's my memory is being triggered and I'm going to remember it when we're done recording. But I do remember feeling that sense of deception for a very long time after. But the recovery is always so exciting for the people that kind of suspect what's going on, I think. I think it just depends on what you're doing, and the whole concept is, I think, a great concept on itself, because especially if everything in the show is running smoothly and then all of a sudden something fails, it's a moment for the audience to go, oh, this guy sucks, because that's kind of what they all want. You know, I was listening to Mike Birbiglia's podcast, and I'm trying to get him on. I sent him an email. I don't think he'll read it.
just keep doing it. Celebrities
Sending the same email.
Yeah, just keep sending it.
He talked about seeing this young kid. They were at a dinner party, and this 12-year-old kept showing him a card trick, and he had to keep acting like it was the most amazing trick ever because the kid kept showing it to him. And I think that's how some people feel in most magic shows, where they just feel obligated to go, wow, that was good, when really they hate it.
I get that. That's why I don't like doing strolling gigs.
Sure.
Because I get more... Because people who go to a magic show, for the most part, I would say, want to see magic. But when you do, like, a wedding or an event where a magician is at, those people don't necessarily want to see magic. And then I feel like they are trying to be nice. And then it makes you feel stupid because you're like, I'm a professional, jerk faces.
This perfectly segues into what I wonder. Remember last week I was mentioning I had a socially distant show I was very nervous about?
Yeah.
It was interesting.
Oh, yeah. I never got the second half of that text.
I sent you most of it. So I started journaling because I'll go through the journal right now because I'm like, I have nothing else to do. And this is just fascinating. And I want to remember all of this. And I'm such a David Sedaris fan. And he encourages journaling. Just like write down everything, what people are saying, what's going on. And I'm so bad about it. But I've been trying to get into that habit. And it's easier when you're out in the real world, I notice. When I'm traveling or if I'm out just not in my house, it's just natural for me to go, oh, I'm going to jot this interesting thing down. So I just forced myself to do this for literally 3 hours. And I was only supposed to be there for about an hour-ish, with that includes setup and show. So this is a journal from a socially distant show. Do you mind if I read this?
No, I need you to read it because okay. I was laughing.
I've sent you about an hour's worth, I think. Oh,
I was laughing so hard reading it.
Okay, and before the thing I didn't write in this, and I put this up on my private Facebook. I didn't put it up on Instagram, I mean, because I didn't want the client to see it the day after. Now they'll hear it. A week before, I purchased a battery pack because I found out there's no power outside, so I need my microphone. And then I purchased a $600 Bose speaker that was shipped and just showed up like right in time before the show because I didn't have my speaker died. So I had to do all this prep for the show, and then I spent like just like what we were talking about, a day or two just organizing the show, getting the set list ready, because I'm like, you know what, I'm a little bit nervous, I haven't done a live show in a while, I want to make sure. It's kind of my OCD. If the show is set and everything's packed and ready to go, I'm much more relaxed.
Yeah.
If something's not prepped, I get very kind of anxious. It's just a weird quirk I have. But this is jumping into the journaling process. 7 p.m. After being nervous all day, I can finally leave my house for a 9:15 show. Takes about an hour to get there. 8 p.m. Arrival. I pass the restaurant and don't see a special spaced out patio as discussed. I'm about 30 minutes ahead of schedule, so I decide to stay in the car and finish a podcast. 8:30. I walk over with my gear and confirm my suspicion. Social distance is more like 5 tables of 7 squished together on the street. I speak to the client, suggest maybe a distant table magic because there isn't really a performance space at all. They really want a show, so we decide to move a few tables meant to hold presents. Also, they were supposed to be done with dinner at this time. Dinner hasn't started. I go inside the restaurant and begin to set up the show. The restaurant's empty except for one table. 8:40. Word is getting around that I'm a stripper. 9 p.m. I'm set up and take a seat. Maybe they'll be ready in about 15 minutes. Early, I think. That would be great. 9:05. A nice waiter offers me a Peroni, which is a delicious Italian beer. I say no at first to be professional, and then after his persistence, I say yes because he's a nice guy. 9:20. The husband of the lady who booked me comes over and tells me that they are just now starting dinner and asks if I want to wait until desserts start or to start the show after desserts. I'll say I'll start at the top of dessert. 9:30. Almost done with the beer. It helps with the nerves, but now I am sleepy. 9:34. Listening to one table randomly inside the restaurant. This is the only table randomly allowed to sit inside the restaurant, by the way. A lady. I'm estimating about 4 wines in, says, he keeps asking when we're going to be having kids. I say never. 9:39. Forgot for a second that I had to do a show. Then I remembered. I stopped saying yes to gigs like this for last year because this was always the same pattern. 8 months into quarantine makes you forget things. 9:46. A second waiter has asked me if I can make any food disappear. All of the waiters are treating me like a celebrity, and I feel like I'm going to let them down. 9:48. I realize that the advantage of virtual shows is that they start on time. 9:51. The husband of the lady comes over to make sure I'm okay. Offers food. They always offer food. It's a nice gesture, but why would I want to eat a plate of pasta right before having to run around and do manager tricks? And also, learn the city may shut down the outdoor dining at 11 p.m., so the longer I sit here, the shorter my show is. 9:55. The jazz music has gotten really loud inside the restaurant, like they are rushing them out to eat faster. I'm near the Comedy and Magic Club, one of my favorite places to work. I do 10 minutes there for the happiest audiences in the world, get free food and drinks. I get to open and hang with celebrities. I'd be driving home by now. 10:15 p.m. I set up in my tiny space. Music is blasting from the restaurant next door. Glad I bought my new sound system. Glad I don't have to use any of my music either. I'm not even nervous because I'm going to be a because it's going to be a competition between magic and drinks. My instinct is to get mad in these situations, but I'm taking responsibility for getting myself into this situation in the first place. 10-16. Drunk guy who apparently sells this place wine thought I worked for the FBI because my mic is on and I was sitting down. He was mad when he offered his hand for a handshake and I fist bumped him. I feel OCD's people's pain. I feel pain for the OCD people. 10-17. Friendly waiters are starting to get suspicious. Less happy looks. Now more looks of, why are you still sitting here? 10-20. I get a second wind. I'm wide awake on having to pee and not giving a shit anymore. 10-30. Husband starts the intro. Telling jokes, in quotations. Confessing that COVID basically saved their marriage. 10-38.
Jesus.
Husband finishes speech. 10-39. I start the show and rush through it because it's confirmed that the city will shut down at 11 p.m. 10:58, I make the mistake of ending with a brand new trick, and it fails.
Yay!
11:01, and it's a time-based trick. 11:01, I say thank you and goodbye and pack up all of my props. 11:03, husband hands me a bag of food to take home. No tip. 11:54, I get home. I found that the bag of food has lamb chops in it. Win. Next day, I get a COVID test. I kind of butchered some of that. It's funnier in reading.
Oh,
it's hard to read your own words.
So good.
It was just, it was an experience.
I wish, yeah, you've totally inspired me to just start writing stuff like that down. Because, like, you ever been, like, interviewed in a situation where, like, you're the magician? So, like, I've done a couple of, UCB shows where I'm like the monologist. So I'll do like a trick and then they interview me. And they always ask the same questions, which is like, has a trick ever gone wrong? What's the worst thing an audience has said to you? What is blah, blah. And I don't have any examples.
Because they all kind of blend together and you're trying not to focus on, you're trying to forget the bad show.
Yeah. And it's like nothing has traumatized me deeply enough that I remember it. So when someone says, the only thing I remember is I was doing walk around at a restaurant. 2012. Like, I got off in the Heights and I started, I was like, oh, I'm gonna do magic for a living now. And so I was doing, at this dinner theater that I've done shows at, was doing this big Vegas big band show. So it was like Rat Pack stuff, and they had, I was doing walk around, and then I went on stage and did like 5 minutes, and then they had a comedian do 5 minutes, and then they did this whole Rat Pack show. And it was really early on. So I did like Professor's Nightmare in that 5 minute thing on stage because it was like the only parlor trick that I knew how to do. But I remember walking around doing magic, and most people would get excited, especially if you're at like a Vegas themed show, because you're like, oh, a magician, that makes sense, it's Vegas. Ah. And I went up to this man and this woman, and he was much older. He was like drove a Ferrari, and like younger woman he was with, not sure if it was his wife kind of relationship. And so when I walked over the table and I said, I'm the magician for the evening because it's whatever. So I'd love you guys want to see a magic trick. And he looked me stone cold in the face and my eyes and just went, no. And I was like, oh, okay. And she, like, the woman, like, looked at him to, like, what should I say? So when he said no, she just, like, okay, yeah, I guess we're not going to do this. So I was like, okay. And I had never had anyone say no in such a stern manner. And so I was like, are you sure? And he's like, yeah, no, we don't want this. And I was like, why? And he said, because magic makes me feel stupid. And then I walked away.
Yeah, he's not wrong.
He's not.
Restaurants, oh man, I don't envy anybody doing restaurants, because I did them for many years, and they are the hardest place to do magic.
Because so hard.
It's constantly doing that, going up to a table and da-da-da-da, and starting the whole show over, and oh my goodness.
But yeah, I think it's so exhausting to constantly get people on your side.
Yeah.
Because you have to do it every table. You constantly have to start over.
And it's hard because some people are there to have a conversation, and then other people there are in their families, and like they all kind of hate each other, and they don't want to talk or interact. They just want to sit there. I can't imagine now, like, because when I was doing it, iPhones weren't a thing. So like now I imagine the hardest thing, and I guess I have experienced this in like when I lived in Orlando and do gigs in Miami, I was just constantly fighting rich douchey people's instinct to be on their phone.
Yeah.
Or just like hold their phone as I'm doing a trick to them. I'm like, just tell me to go away.
Yeah.
Like, it's just almost, say no.
It's politer just to be like, no, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would much rather do that. And I go, oh, and I don't mind it when people are like, oh, no, we're good. Thanks, man. Like, great. I'm not wasting your time and you're not wasting my time.
I did a walk around. See, all the bad stories are walk around.
Oh, I have one when you're done after this, too. I still cringe about.
I did a Halloween party at a mansion where there was too many things happening. A, it was at a mansion, so there was a bunch of rich people, and they didn't care. They didn't want entertainment. They were just there because it was a DJ, it was loud, it was in a mansion, it was super high-end. And I didn't want to be there. I was there for like 4 hours, and I just was like, this is going to be the worst. And it absolutely was. But I remember doing it, I went up to, they had like standing tables, and there was this couple there, these two men there, and I walked up to the table, and I was like, hey, I'm the magician for the evening, the entertainment, the walk around. And it seemed like both guys were like, oh, that's great. But they were just saying that to be nice because they thought their partner wanted to watch me. So then they both like went to their phones because they thought the other one was watching.
Yeah, I've had that too. And we're like, it's like a table of 10 and then most of them just turn their backs on you because they're like, oh, Cindy wanted to see a trick.
Correct. Yeah. Yeah. 100%. It was so weird. And I was like, why am I? I'm literally doing this for me. Neither of you are watching.
Oh, man. For me, the biggest cringe, and a lot of it was on me because I was younger. You know, I was only doing magic a couple of years at that point, and it was a strolling gig. I was booked for a graduation party, and it was like, I think I remember it was like 6 o'clock to 8 o'clock, and nobody was there for the first hour. Literally nobody was there. So then, you know, I do the hour, and I did a couple of people, and I was still like at that point nervous to go up to only adults. I don't know what that was about. It was a weird thing in my past.
Okay. It makes sense.
I don't think I went up and did as much as I should have, and I definitely shouldn't have done this. I shouldn't have gone up to the guy who booked it, who like was living in this mansion, who booked this for their daughter or son, and go, hey, great, thanks for having me. You gonna mail the check out? I did not show them a trick. I didn't do anything. And I just think of like, what in me, like, why would I have gone up to the client and asked that? Like, of course they're going to mail the check or like payment because it was booked through an agent. And like, it came back the next day, an email came through, like, was like, we were not very impressed with the magic of Nick. We want a refund.
Oh my goodness.
Think about that all the time. Like that, anytime I'm having a gig where I feel like I'm remotely failing, that memory immediately gets triggered and it's just traumatizing.
Well, the same party, this mansion Halloween party, when I got there, I was speaking to the person who contacted me was the CEO's assistant. So I never had any contact with him, the guy who's hosting the guy who owned the house, was hosting this party. So I was always in email with his assistant. And then at one point she was like, you have to come to the office, you know, this week before the gig, because he wants to talk to you about like what you're going to do and stuff, which is fine. And I get that more in virtual shows. And this was so weird. So I drove down to like, Newport Beach or something, to this guy's office. And I get there and another assistant was there. He was like, oh, the person you've been in contact isn't here today. So they kind of told me you were coming. What are you? A magician. He was like, okay, well, so-and-so, the CEO's in a meeting right now. So he'll be out in like 10 minutes. And I waited for 30 minutes. And the assistant came back out and he was like, all right, so he's not going to meet with you today. But, you know, he's approved you. So we'll see you at the party. And then when I got to his house, I didn't know anybody because that assistant's not there. So I'm just kind of like, oh my God, I had to Google search the CEO's name to find a picture of him. So I get there and I see him. So I go up to him and I go, hey, I'm the magician you hired. And he's like, cool. And he's like, are you any good? And I was like, yep. Yeah. And he's like, cool, show us a trick. So it's like me and like three of his guy friends, and I start a trick, and he immediately walks away.
Oh, my God.
So I feel like you don't know, like, what do you do to that in that situation? It's not like, yeah, the person who contacted you or didn't contact you. Yeah, it's just, it doesn't make any sense. Walk around. Guys, I have so much respect for anybody that does walk around that, like, is still happy in their life.
Yeah, I get it. I was talking to Joel Ward, a buddy of ours, and he's like, yeah, he's doing a lot of virtual shows and doing great at it, but he said he's, you know, just not enjoying it as much because he enjoys close-up more and walk-around, and I'm like, man, we are just polar opposites in that. When he said that, I was like, that is my nightmare.
Yeah. I'm like a bass player. The bass player joke is like, what's the latest I can get there, and how much am I making?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. That's exactly what it is, and it's... It sounds, I mean, if you're not a performer, that sounds terrible, but if you've been in that situation, you completely comprehend that.
You've done enough horrible gigs where you've been mistreated that you just kind of go, okay, then what's the latest time I can get there and how much am I getting paid? Because it's like, I can do my show. I love doing my show. I am excited when I do it, but like the stress of the environment isn't worth it sometimes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yep. There was one an episode in January, I talked about a similar thing that like literally became this book of short essays that I'll probably never finish, became my opener because the ending line was, you know, I was at some rich people's house and all the kids went away. And, you know, I'm literally standing there with one kid and he's just telling me about his depression and asking me if I can make his depression disappear. He's 12. And then The sentence I wrote was, sometimes you do magic for the love of it, and sometimes you do magic to pay for your dog's teeth extractions. And that's exactly what that's what those gigs are. And I have nothing but mad respect for the people who enjoy that type of thing. Because you and I have been fortunate enough, and we are grateful that we have done so many great gigs and so many fun, like you toured off Broadway, you've done all these, you've been on Fool Us. I've done some amazing shows of my own with other people, and then you're just constantly comparing these like private party gigs to those.
Yeah.
When in reality, you shouldn't. It's apples and oranges. It's a completely different thing.
Correct. Well, the problem is we keep eating apples and oranges because we have to help fix our dogs or get our birds food.
Yeah. I keep like I said in this, you know, this journal of just like I keep. 8 months ago, I said, I'm not doing these anymore. And then, sure enough, this drops in my lap. I'm like, well, you know, it pays okay. What could go wrong?
I think also, like, the project we're doing that we've been working on, as mind-numbing as it is, I honestly was like, this is enough money to get faster internet. Like, if I just think of it that I'm doing this to get faster internet, I could do this every week. Like, fine. I could totally do this.
Yeah, I think we're always, no matter what, going to compare what we're doing to those terrible experiences because, like, that's all you can do, and that's how you stay motivated, I think.
Yeah.
Well, you got a hard out, so...
I have a hard out. Guys, I got to go to work. Speaking of doing something, because I have to make money at something.
I appreciate you being honest about it. That's good. I think most people would be like, "Oh no, I gotta go. Take a long walk or something."
But nope, I gotta.
You're just working the Black Friday.
I gotta go to Best Buy and do my job, which is.
I think
nothing.
That's important for people. I think there's so many people that are just, you know, myself included, for a very long time of like, no. Only performing, like, during, I'm talking, like, whole quarantine.
Oh,
it's
yeah,
like,
yeah,
oh,
yeah.
Nope, not going to get a real job. But sometimes, like, it was just coming to this point, like, this is kind of what we have to do.
And oh, yeah.
Once my virtual shows stop, I'm sure I'll have to be in a similar situation.
Well, next episode, I will, this is my, so for everyone who doesn't know, which is everybody, this is my first, like, non-performing job where I, like, clock in and act like, doing inventory,
and
I
guarantee we were talking about this the other day of just being paid hourly. Like back in college,
correct.
I worked at Circuit City for a few months, and the concept of being paid hourly makes zero sense to me because, like, it is the most anti-productive thing.
Oh,
it's
yeah.
Like you're telling me if I go slower at this task you told me to do, I'll get paid more money.
Well, when I worked at Disney, that's how it was. That's what was so confusing. It was like hourly rate, but we did six shows.
So Kristen was the same thing too.
Yeah. So you just kind of
I was contracted, so it was I had a day rate, so
gotcha.
It was different.
But yeah. It is
yeah,
so
hers
confusing.
Was the same thing too. It was weird. It's like she got paid for 8 hours today, and I'm like, what? You did six shows.
No, you didn't really do the 8 hours. And you go, yeah, I know. I don't understand why people are paying me like that. Then doesn't make any sense. So I've only worked like 2 days at the most, and I didn't work at all for the last 2 weeks, which is horrible. But this week I'm working 4 days. So we'll get to the end of those 4 days, and then I'll tell you how much I hate it or if I love it. I will say the 2 days that I did work, like back-to-back, I actually did like the mind-numbing work of like just reorganizing a shelf.
Yeah.
Which is
well, the thing is, once again, it goes back. We're always comparing it to these terrible gigs, which we're getting paid stupid amounts of money for.
Correct.
But also, it hurts your soul, and it makes you question. Like, this isn't magic. This is me being a puppet for people.
Correct.
So I feel you.
Yeah. So we'll do that next time. We'll try to get Mike Birbiglia, guys. Just keep emailing him. If everybody can just tweet or
just. Please tweet at Mike Birbiglia and say, hey, do this podcast.
Yeah, yeah. Just say that. Don't describe the podcast. Just say, hey, do this podcast.
I didn't either because it's funny. I emailed him before he finished what he was saying because he was saying how much he hated magic. By the end of it, he was saying because he's buddies with Delgadio.
Uh-huh.
It's like, oh, I like it now. So maybe we'll reach out to Derek Delgadio and tell him to do the podcast.
Maybe we'll get – I'm doing a show for Rhett and Link for Good Mythical Morning. Which some people may know that. I know we talked about it a little bit. So I'm super excited about that because they also hate magicians. So my goal is to change their mind.
Good. That's our whole point.
That's all we're doing in magic. We're just trying to get people to like magic again.
Which is basically like what we're complaining about from private parties. Is just trying to get these people to like magic and we're not doing it.
That's great.
All right. Well, have a good day and we'll talk to you all very soon. Become a Patreon member. Support the show.
Yeah.
I always forget to mention that.
The more Patreon people you have, supporters you have, Simon will come back.
That's true. If we hit 100 Patreons, Simon's coming back.
Yeah, yeah. I think we should the only time Simon should come back is if we get, like, if you get, like, a guest. Like, he should make time out of Puzzle Land.
Yeah. I'm trying to get him. We did a segment when he was called Pro Tips, and I'm trying to get him to like send me a voice recording of a pro tip he came up with.
Oh, that's cool.
But yes, we were working on. And thanks to all the patrons who stuck with the show even during the hiatus. I sent out a letter that said, "Hey, you don't have to keep giving us money because we're not putting out new episodes for a few months." And most people continue to give us money, so I really appreciate that.
Yeah, that's great.
Good people. Okay, everybody, have a nice week. Have a good Thanksgiving.
Yes, Thanksgiving.
Okay, bye.
Thanks so much for listening to the show. Please give us 5 stars on Apple Podcast. If you really like the show, you can donate a few bucks a month on our website, twomagiciansonemike.com, or become a monthly subscriber through our Patreon link. Thanks to all the people that support the show and keep it up and running. Be sure to follow us on the interwebs at @twomagiciansonemike. Thanks so much for listening. Have a great week.